in style. The fourth was, to Butler's eternal shame, dispatched with a spinning kick. But the most ostentatious was saved for the last pair. The manservant rolled onto his back, caught them by the collars of their donkey jackets, and flipped them into Dublin Harbour. Big splashes. Plenty of wailing. Perfect. Two headlights poked from the black shadow of a cargo container, and a government saloon screeched along the quay. As anticipated, a customs and excise team on stakeout. Butler grinned with grim satisfaction and ducked around the corner. He was long gone before the agents had flipped their badges or begun inquiries. Not that their interrogations would yield much.
"Big as a house!"
was hardly an adequate description to track him down. By the time Butler reached the car, Artemis had already returned from his mission.
"Well done, old friend," he commented. "Although I'm certain your martial arts sensei is turning in his grave. A spinning kick? How could you?"
Butler bit his tongue, reversing the four-wheel drive off the wooden works. As they crossed the overpass, he couldn't resist glancing down at the chaos he had created. The government men were hauling a sodden docker from the polluted waters. Artemis had needed this diversion for something, but Butler knew there was no point in asking what. His employer did not share his plans with anyone, until he thought the time was right. And if Artemis Fowl thought the time was right, then it usually was. Root emerged shaking from the pod. He didn't remember it being like this in his time. Although, truth be told, it had probably been an awful lot worse. Back in the Shillelagh days, there were no fancy polymer harnesses, no auto thrusters, and certainly no external monitors. It was just gut instinct and a touch of enchantment. In some ways, Root preferred it like that. Science was taking the magic out of everything. He stumbled down the tunnel into the terminal. As the number one preferred destination, Tara had a fully-fledged passenger lounge. Six shuttles a week came in from Haven City alone. Not on the flares, of course. Paying tourists didn't like to be jostled around quite that much, unless, of course, they were on an illegal jaunt to Disneyland. The fairy fort was crammed with full moon overnighters complaining about the shuttle suspensions. A beleaguered sprite was sheltering behind her ticket desk, besieged by angry gremlins.
"There's no point hexing me," squealed the sprite. "There's the elf you want right there."
She pointed a quivering green finger at the approaching commander. The gremlin mob turned en route, and when they saw the triple-barreled blaster on his hip, they kept right on turning. Root grabbed the PA stand from behind the desk and hauled it out to the extent of its cable.
"Now hear this," he growled,
his gravelly tones echoing around the terminal.
"This is Commander Root of the LEP. We have a serious situation above ground, and I would appreciate cooperation from all you civilians. First, I would like you to all stop your yapping so I can hear myself think."
Root paused to make certain his wishes were being respected. They were.
"Secondly, I would like every single one of you, including those squalling infants, to sit down on the courtesy benches until I have gone on my way. Then you can get back to griping or stuffing your faces, or whatever else it is civilians do."
No one had ever accused Root of political correctness. No one was ever likely to, either.
"And I want whoever's in charge to get over here, now!"
Root tossed the stand onto the desk. A blare of whistling feedback grated on every eardrum in the building. Within fractions of a second, an out-of-breath elf-goblin hybrid was bobbing at his elbow.
"Anything we can do, Commander?"
Root nodded, twisting a thick cigar into the hole beneath his nose.
"I want you to open a tunnel straight through this place. I don't want to be bothered by customs or immigration. Start moving everybody below after my boys get here."
The shuttleport director swallowed.
"Everybody?"
"Yes. That includes terminal personnel. And take everything you can carry. Full evacuation."
He stopped and glared into the director's mauve eyes.
"This is not a drill."
"You mean?"
"Yes," said Root, continuing down the access ramp. "The mud people have committed an overly hostile act. Who knows where this is going?"
The elf-goblin combo watched as Root disappeared in a cloud of cigar smoke. An overly hostile act. It could mean war. He punched in his accountant's number on his mobile.
"Bark, yes. This is Nimbus. I want you to sell all my shares in the shuttleport. Yes, all of them. I have a hunch the price is about to take a severe dive."
Captain Holly Short felt as though a sucker slug was drawing her brain out through her earhole.
She tried to figure out what could possibly have caused such agony, but her faculties didn't stretch to memory just yet. Breathing and lying down were about all she could manage. Time to attempt a word. Something short and pertinent. Help, she decided, would be the one to go for. She took a trembling breath and opened her mouth.
Help,
said her treacherous lips. No good. Incomprehensible, even by a drunken gnome's standards. What was going on here? She was flat on her back with no more strength in her body than a damp tunnel route. What could have done this to her? Holly concentrated, skirting the edge of blinding pain. The troll. Was that it? Had the troll mauled her in that restaurant? Well, that would explain a lot. But no. She seemed to remember something about the old country. And the ritual. And there was something digging into her ankle. Hello? A voice. Not hers. Not even Elfin. You it, then? One of the European languages. Latin? No, English. She was in England. I thought the dart might have killed you. Aliens' insides are different from ours. I saw that on television. Gibberish. Aliens? Insides? What was the creature talking about? You look fit. Like Muchacho Maria. She's a Mexican midget wrestler. Holly groaned. Her gift of tongues must be on the blink. Time to see exactly what kind of craziness she was dealing with here. Focusing all her strength at the front of her head, Holly cracked open one eye. She closed it again almost immediately. There appeared to be a giant blonde fly staring down at her. Don't be scared, said the fly. Just sunglasses. Holly opened both eyes this time. The creature was tapping a silver eye. No, not an eye. A lens. A mirrored lens. Like the lenses worn by the other two. It all came back in a jolt, rushing to fill the hole in her memory like a combination lock clicking into place. She had been abducted by two humans during the ritual. Two humans with an extraordinary knowledge of fairy affairs. Holly tried to speak again. Where am I? The human giggled delightedly, clapping her hands together. Holly noticed her nails, long and painted.
You can speak English. What sort of an accent is that?
Sounds like a little bit of everything.
Holly frowned. The girl's voice was corkscrewing right to the middle of her headache. She lifted her arm. No locator.
Where are my things?
The girl wagged her finger, as one might at a naughty child.
Artemis has to take your little gun away, and all those other toys. Couldn't have you hurting yourself.
Artemis?
Artemis Fowl? This was all his idea. Everything is always his idea.
Holly frowned.
Artemis Fowl.
For some reason, even the name made her shiver. It was a bad omen. Fairy intuition was never wrong.
They'll come for me, you know, she said,
her voice rasping through dry lips.
You don't know what you've done.
The girl frowned.
You're absolutely right.
I've no clue what's going on.
So there's no future in trying to psych me out. Holly frowned. It was obviously pointless playing mind games with this human. The mesmer was her only hope, but that couldn't penetrate reflective surfaces. How the devil did these humans know that? That could be worked out later. For now, she had to figure a way to separate this vacuous girl from her mirrored sunglasses.
You're a pretty human, she said,
voice dripping with honeyed flattery.
Why, thank you.
Holly.
Why, thank you, Holly. I was in the local paper once. I won a competition, Miss Sugarbeet Fair 1999.
I knew it. Natural beauty. I'll bet your eyes are spectacular.
So everyone tells me.
Juliet nodded,
lashes like clock springs.
Holly sighed. If only I could see them.
Why ever not?
Juliet's fingers curled around the glass's arm. Then she hesitated.
Maybe I shouldn't.
Why not, just for a second?
I don't know. Artemis told me never to take these off.
He'd never know.
Juliet pointed to a view cam mounted on the wall.
Oh, he'd find out. Artemis finds out about everything.
She leaned in close to the fairy.
Sometimes I think he can see inside my head, too.
Holly frowned, foiled again by this Artemis creature.
Come on, 1 second. What harm could it do?
Juliet pretended to think about it.
None, I suppose. Unless, of course, you're hoping to nail me with the mesmer. Just how stupid do you think I am?
I have another idea, said Holly, her tone altogether more serious. Why don't I get up, knock you out, and take those stupid glasses off? Juliet laughed delightedly, as if it was the most ridiculous thing she'd ever heard.
Good one, fairy girl.
I'm deadly serious, human.
Well, if you're serious,
sighed Juliet, reaching a delicate finger behind her lenses to wipe away a tear.
2 reasons.
1, Artemis said that while you're in a human dwelling, you have to do what we want, and I want you to stay on that cot.
Holly closed her eyes. Right again. Where did this group get their information?
And 2,
Juliet smiled again, but this time there was a hint of her brother in those teeth.
2, because I went through the same training as Butler, and I've been dying for somebody to practice my pile driver on.
We'll see about that, human, thought Holly. Captain Short wasn't 100% yet, and there was also the small matter of the thing digging into her ankle. She thought she knew what it could be, and if she was right, then it could be the beginnings of a plan. Commander Root had Holly's locator frequency keyed into his helmet face screen. It took Root longer than expected to reach Dublin. The modern wing rigs were more complicated than he was used to. Plus, he'd neglected to take refresher courses. At the right altitude, he could almost superimpose the luminous map on his visor over the actual Dublin streets below him. Almost.
Fully, you pompous centaur, he barked into his mouthpiece.
Problem, bossman? Came the tinny reply.
Problem? You can say that again. When was the last time you updated the Dublin files?
Root could hear sucking noises in his ear. It sounded as though Foley was having lunch.
Sorry, Commander. Just finishing off this carrot. Dublin, let's see. 75. 1875.
I thought so. This place is completely different. The humans have even managed to change the shape of the coastline.
Foley was silent for a moment. Root could just imagine him wrestling with the problem. The centaur did not like to be told that any part of his system was out of date.
Okay, he said at last. Here's what I'm going to do. We have a scope on a satellite TV bird with a footprint in Ireland.
I see,
muttered Root, which was basically a lie.
I'm going to email last week's sweep direct to your visor. Luckily, there's a video card in all the new helmets.
Luckily.
The tricky bit will be to coordinate your flight pattern with the video feed.
Root had had enough.
How long, Foley?
2 minutes, give or take.
Give or take what?
About 10 years, if my calculations are off.
They'd better not be off, then. I'll hover until we know.
124 seconds later, Root's black and white blueprints faded out to be replaced by full-colour daylight imaging. When Root moved, it moved, and Holly's locator beacon dot moved too.
Impressive, said Root.
What was that, Commander?
I said impressive, shouted Root. No need to get a swollen head.
The commander heard the sound of a room full of laughter, and realized that Foley had him on the speakers. Everyone had heard him complimenting the centaur's work. There'd be no talking to him for at least a month, but it was worth it. The video he was receiving now was bang up to date. If Captain Short was being held in a building, the computer would be able to give him the 3D blueprints instantaneously. It was foolproof. Except...
Foley, the beacon's gone offshore. What's going on?
Boat or ship, sir, I'd say to guess.
Root cursed himself for not thinking of it. They'd be having a right old giggle in the Situation Room. Of course it was a ship. Root dropped down a few hundred metres until its shadowy outline loomed through the mist. A whaler, by the looks of it. Technology may have changed over the centuries, but there was still nothing like a harpoon to slaughter the world's largest mammal.
Captain Short is in there somewhere, Foley. Below decks. What can you give me?
Nothing, sir. It's not a permanent fixture. By the time we've run down our registration, it'll be way too late.
What about thermal imaging?
No, Commander, that hull must be at least 50 years old. Very high lead content. We can't even penetrate the first layer. I'm afraid you're on your own.
Root shook his head.
After all the billions we've poured into your department, remind me to slash your budget when I get back.
Yes, sir, came the reply, sullen for once,
Foley did not like budget jokes.
Just have the retrieval squad on full alert. I may need them at a moment's notice.
I will, sir.
You'd better. Over and out.
Root was on his own. Truth be told, that was the way he liked it. No science, no uppity centaur whinnying in his ear. Just a fairy, his wits, and maybe a touch of magic. Root tilted his polymer wings, hugging the underside of a fog bank. There was no need to be careful. With his shield activated, he was invisible to the human eye. Even on stealth-sensitive radar, he would be no more than a barely perceptible distortion. The commander swooped low to the gunwales. It was an ugly craft, this one. The smell of death and pain lingered in the blood-swabbed decks. Many noble creatures had died here, died and been dissected for a few bars of soap and some heating oil. Root shook his head. Humans were such barbarians. Holly's beeper was flashing urgently now. She was close by, very close. Somewhere within a 200-meter radius was the hopefully still-breathing form of Captain Short. But without blueprints, he would have to navigate the belly of this ship, unaided. Root alighted gently on the deck, his boots adhering slightly to the mixture of dried soap and blubber coating the steel surface. The craft appeared to be deserted. No sentry on the gangplank, no bosun on the bridge, not a light anywhere. Still, no reason to abandon caution. Root knew from bitter experience that humans popped up when you least expected them. Once, when he was helping the retrieval boys scrape some pod wreckage off a tunnel wall, they were spotted by a group of potholing humans. What a mess that had been. Mass hysteria, high-speed chases, group mind wipes, the whole nine yards. Root shuddered. Nights like that could put decades on a fairy. Keeping himself fully shielded, the commander stowed his wings in their sheath, advancing on foot across the deck. There were no other life forms showing up on his screen, but, like Foley said, the hull had a high lead content. Even the paint was lead-based. The entire boat was a floating eco-hazard. The point being that there could be an entire battalion of stormtroopers concealed below decks, and his helmet cam would never pick them up. Very reassuring. Even Holly's beacon was a few shades below par, and that had a micro-nuclear battery sending out the pulses. Root didn't like this. Not one bit.
Keep calm, he derided himself. You're shielded. There's not a human alive that can see you now.
Root hauled open the first hatch. It swung easily enough. The commander sniffed. The mud people had greased the hinges with whale blubber. Was there no end to their depravity? The corridor was steeped in viscous darkness, so Root flicked down his infrared filter. Okay, so sometimes technology did come in handy, but he wouldn't be telling Foley that. The maze of pipes and grilling before him was immediately illuminated with an unnatural red light. Minutes later, he was regretting even thinking something nice about the Centaur's technology. The infrared filter was messing with his depth perception, and he'd whacked his head on two protruding U-bends so far. Still no sign of life, human or fairy. Plenty of animal, mostly rodents, and when you're just topping a meter in height yourself, a good-sized rat can be a real threat, especially since rats are one of the few breeds that can see straight through a fairy shield. Root unstrapped his blaster and set it to level 3, or medium rare, as the elves in the locker room called it. He sent one of the rats scurrying away with a smoky behind as a warning to the rest. Nothing fatal, just enough to teach him not to look sideways at a fairy again in a hurry. Root picked up his pace. This place was ideal for an ambush. He was virtually blind with his back to the only exit. A recon nightmare. If one of his own men had pulled a stunt like this, he'd have their stripes for it. But desperate times required judicious risk-taking. That was the essence of command. He ignored several doors to either side, following the beacon, 10 meters now. A steel hatch sealed the corridor, and Captain Short, or her corpse, lay on the other side of it. Root put his shoulder to the door. It swung open without protest. Bad news. If a live creature was being held captive, the hatch would be locked. The commander flicked the blaster's power level to 5 and advanced through the hole. His weapon hummed softly. There was enough power on tap now to vaporize a bull elephant with a single blast. No sign of Holly. No sign of anything much. He was in a refrigerated storage bay. Glittering stalactites hung from a maze of piping. Root's breath fanned before him in icy clouds.
How would that look to a human, disembodied breathing? Ah, said a familiar voice. We have a visitor. Root dropped to one knee, levelling the handgun at the voice's source. Come to rescue your missing officer, no doubt. The commander blinked a bead of sweat from his eye. Sweat? At this temperature? Well, I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place. The voice was tinny, artificial, amplified. Root checked his locator for life signs. There were none. Not in this chamber, at any rate. He was being monitored somehow. Was there a camera here somewhere, concealed in the maze of overhead plumbing, that could penetrate the fairy shield? Where are you? Show yourself! The human chuckled. It echoed unnaturally around the vast hold. Oh, no, not yet, my fairy friend. But soon enough. And believe me, when I do, you'll wish I hadn't. Root followed the voice. Keep the human talking. What do you want? What do I want? Again, you'll know soon enough. There was a low crate in the center of the hold. On it sat an attaché case. The case was open. Why bring me here at all? Root poked the case with his pistol. Nothing happened. I brought you here for a demonstration. The commander leaned over the open container. Inside, in snug foam packing, were a flat vacuum-packed package and a triple-band VHF transmitter. Resting on top was Holly's locator. Root groaned. Holly wouldn't willingly give up her equipment. No LEP officer would. What sort of demonstration, you demented freak? Again that cold chuckle. A demonstration of my utter commitment to my goals. Root should have started to worry about his own health then, but he was too busy worrying about Holly's. If you harm one tip of my officer's pointy ears... Your officer? Oh, we have management. How privileged. All the better to make my point. Alarm bells went off in Root's head. Your point? The voice emanating from the aluminium speaker grid was as serious as nuclear winter. My point, little fairy man, is that I am not someone to be trifled with. Now, if you would please observe the package. The commander duly observed. It was a nondescript enough shape. Flat, like a slab of putty, or... Oh, no. Beneath the sealant, a red light flicked on. Fly, little fairy, said the voice, and tell your friends Artemis Fowl II says hello. Beside the red light, green symbols began to click through a routine. Root recognized them from his human studies class back in the academy. They were... numbers. Going backwards. A countdown. Garvet, growled Root. There's no point in translating that word, as it would have to be censored. He turned and fled up the corridor, Artemis Fowl's mocking tones carrying down the metal funnel. Three, said the human. Two. Garvet, repeated Root. The corridor seemed much longer now. A sliver of starry sky peeked through a wedge of open door. Root activated his wings. This would take some fancy flying. The hummingbird's span was barely narrower than the ship's corridor. One. Sparks flew as the electronic wings scraped a protruding pipe. Root cartwheeled, righting himself at Mach 1. Zero, said the voice. Boom! Inside the vacuum-packed package, a detonator sparked, igniting a kilogram of pure Semtex. The white-hot reaction devoured the surrounding oxygen in a nanosecond and surged down the path of least resistance, which was, of course, immediately after LEP Commander Root. Root dropped his visor, opening the throttle to maximum. The door was meters away now. It was just a matter of what reached it first, the fairy or the fireball. He made it. Barely. He could feel the explosion rattling his torso as he threw himself into a reverse loop. Flames latched onto his jumpsuit, licking along his legs. Root continued his maneuver, crashing directly into the icy water. He broke the surface, swearing. Above him, the whaler had been totally consumed by noxious flames. Commander! Came a voice in his earpiece. It was Foley. He was back in range. Commander, what's your status? Root lifted free of the water's grip. My status, Foley, is extremely annoyed. Get on your computers. I want to know everything there is to know about one Artemis Fowl, and I want to know it before I get back to base. Yes, sir, Commander, right away. No wisecrack. Even Foley realized that this was not the time. Root hovered at 300 meters. Below him, the blazing whaler drew emergency vehicles like moths to a light. He dusted charred threads from his elbows. There will be a reckoning for this Artemis Fowl, he vowed. Count on it.
Chapter 6 Siege. Artemis leaned back in the study's leather swivel chair, smiling over steepled fingers. Perfect. That little explosion should cure those fairies of their cavalier attitude. Plus, there was one less whaler in the world. Artemis Fowl did not like whalers. There were less objectionable ways to produce oil byproducts. The pinhole camera concealed in the locator had worked perfectly. With its high-resolution images, he had picked out the fairy's telltale breath crystals. Artemis consulted the basement surveillance monitor. His captive was sitting on the cot now, head in hands. Artemis frowned. He hadn't expected the fairy to appear so human. Until now, they had merely been quarry, animals to be hunted. But now, seeing one like this, in obvious discomfort, it changed things. Artemis put the computer to sleep and crossed to the main doors. Time for a little chat with their guest. Just as his fingers alighted on the brass handles, the door flew open before him. Juliet appeared in the doorway, cheeks flushed from haste.
Artemis, she gasped. Your mother, she...
Artemis felt a lead ball drop in his stomach. Yes?
Well, she says, Artemis... Artemis, that you're...
Yes, Juliet, for heaven's sake, what is it? Juliet placed both hands over her mouth, composing herself. After several seconds, she parted spangled nails, speaking through her fingers.
It's your father, sir, Artemis Senior. Madame Fowl says he's come back.
For a split second, Artemis could have sworn his heart had stopped.
Father? Back? Was it possible?
Of course, he'd always believed his father was alive, but lately, since he'd hatched this fairy scheme, it was almost as if his father had shifted to the back of his mind. Artemis felt guilt churn his stomach. He had given up. Given up on his own father.
Did you see him, Juliet? With your own eyes?
The girl shook her head.
No, Artemis, sir. I just heard voices in the bedroom. But you won't let me through the door. Not for anything. Not even with a hot drink.
Artemis calculated. They had returned barely an hour since. His father could have slipped past Juliet. It was possible. Just possible. He glanced at his watch, synchronized with Greenwich Mean Time by constantly updated radio signals. 3 a.m. Time was ticking on. His entire plan depended on the fairies making their next move before daylight. Artemis started. He was doing it again, pushing family to one side. What was he becoming? His father was the priority here, not some money-making scheme. Juliet was still in the doorway, watching him with those enormous blue eyes. She was waiting for him to make a decision, as he always did. And for once, there was indecision scrawled across his pale features.
Very well, he mumbled eventually. I'd better go up there immediately.
Artemis brushed past the girl, taking the steps two at a time. His mother's room was two flights up, a converted attic space. He hesitated at the door. What would he say if it was his father miraculously returned? What would he do? It was ridiculous dithering about it, impossible to predict. He knocked lightly.
Mother?
No response. But he thought he heard a giggle and was instantly transported into the past. Initially, this room had been his parents' lounge. They would sit on the chaise longue for hours, tittering like schoolchildren, feeding the pigeons or watching the ships sailing past on Dublin Sound. When Artemis Senior had disappeared, Angeline Fowl had become more and more attached to the space, eventually refusing to leave altogether.
Mother, are you all right?
Muffled voices from within, conspiratorial whispers.
Mother, I'm coming in. Wait a minute. Timmy, stop it, you beast. We have company.
Timmy? Artemis's heart thumped like a snare drum in his chest. Timmy, her pet name for his father. Timmy and Artie, the two men in her life. He could wait no longer. Artemis burst through the double doors. His first impression was light. Mother had the lamps on, a good sign, surely. Artemis knew where his mother would be. He knew exactly where to look. But he couldn't. But what if? What if?
Yes? Can we help you?
Artemis turned, his eyes still downcast.
It's me.
His mother laughed, airy and carefree.
I can see it's you, Papa.
Can't you even give your boy one night off? It is our honeymoon, after all. Artemis knew then. It was just an escalation of her madness. Papa? Angeline thought Artemis was his own grandfather, dead over 10 years. He raised his gaze slowly. His mother was seated on the chaise longue, resplendent in her own wedding dress, face clumsily coated with makeup. But that wasn't the worst of it. Beside her was a facsimile of his father, constructed from the mourning suit he'd worn on that glorious day in Christchurch Cathedral 14 years ago. The clothes were padded with tissue, and atop the dress shirt was a stuffed pillowcase with lipstick features. It was almost funny. Artemis choked back a sob, his hopes vanishing like a summer rainbow.
What do you say, Papa?
Said Angeline in a deep bass, nodding the pillow like a ventriloquist manipulating her dummy.
One night off here, boy, eh?
Artemis nodded. What else could he do?
One night, then. Take tomorrow, too. Be happy.
Angeline's face radiated honest joy. She sprang from the couch, embracing her unrecognized son.
Thank you, Papa, thank you.
Artemis returned the embrace, though it felt like cheating.
You're welcome, Angeline. Now, I must be off. Business to attend to.
His mother settled beside her imitation husband.
Yes, Papa, you go. Don't worry, we can keep ourselves amused.
Artemis left. He didn't look back. There were things to be done, fairies to be extorted. He had no time for his mother's fantasy world. Captain Holly Short was holding her head in her hands. One hand, to be precise. The other was scrabbling down the side of her boot, on the camera's blind side. In actuality, her head was crystal clear, but it would do no harm for her enemy to believe her still out of action. Perhaps they would underestimate her, and that would be the last mistake they ever made. Holly's fingers closed around the object that had been digging into her ankle. She knew immediately by its contours what was concealed there. The acorn. It must have slipped into her boot during all the commotion by the oak. This could be a vital development. All she needed was a small patch of earth. Then her powers would be restored. Holly glanced surreptitiously around the cell. Fresh concrete, by the look of it. Not a single crack or flaky corner. Nowhere to bury her secret weapon. Holly stood tentatively, trying out her legs for stability. Not too bad. Bit shaky around the knees, but otherwise, sound enough. She crossed to the wall, pressing her cheek and palms to the smooth surface. The concrete was fresh all right, very recent, still damp in patches. Obviously her prison had been specially prepared.
Looking for something?
Said a voice, a cold, heartless voice. Holly reared back from the wall. The human boy was standing not 2 meters from her, his eyes hidden behind mirrored glasses. He had entered the room without a sound. Extraordinary.
Sit, please.
Holly did not want to sit, please.
What she wanted to do was incapacitate this insolent pup with her elbow and use his miserable hide for leverage.
Artemis could see it in her eyes. It amused him.
Getting ideas, are we, Captain Short?
Holly bared her teeth. It was answer enough. We're both fully aware of the rules here, Captain. This is my house. You must abide by my wishes.
Your laws?
Not mine.
Obviously, my wishes do not include bodily harm to myself, or you attempting to leave this house.
It hit Holly then.
How do you know your name? Your rank?
Artemis smiled, though there was no joy in it.
If you will wear a name tag.
Holly's hand unconsciously covered the silver tag on her suit.
But that's written in Gnomish. I know. I happen to be fluent, as is everyone in my network.
Holly was silent for a moment, processing this momentous revelation.
Foul, she said with feeling. You have no idea what you've done. Bringing the worlds together like this could mean disaster for us all.
Artemis shrugged.
I'm not concerned with us all, just myself. And believe me, I shall be perfectly fine. Now, sit, please.
Holly sat, never taking her hazel eyes from the diminutive monster before her. So what is this master plan, Fowl? Let me guess. World domination?
Nothing so melodramatic, chuckled Artemis. Just riches.
A thief, spat Holly,
You're just a thief! Annoyance flashed across Artemis's features, only to be replaced by his customary sardonic grin. Yes, a thief, if you like. Hardly just a thief, though. The world's first cross-species thief. Captain Short snorted. First cross-species thief. Mud people have been stealing from us for millennia. Why do you think we live underground? True. But I'll be first to successfully separate a fairy from its gold. Gold? Gold? Human idiot. You don't honestly believe that crock of gold nonsense. Some things aren't true, you know. Holly threw her head back and laughed. Artemis checked his nails patiently, waiting for her to finish. When the gales had finally subsided, he shook his index finger. You're right to laugh, Captain Short. For a while there, I did believe in all that under the rainbow crock of gold blarney, but well, now I know better. Now I know about the hostage fund. Holly struggled to keep her face under control. What hostage fund? Oh, come now, Captain. Why bother with a charade? You told me about it yourself. I told you? Stammered Holly. Ridiculous! Look at your arm. Holly rolled up her right sleeve. There was a small cotton pad, taped to the vein. That's where we administered the sodium pentothal, commonly known as truth serum. You sang like a bird. Holly knew it was true. How else could he know? You're mad! Artemis nodded indulgently. If I win, I'm a prodigy. If I lose, then I'm mad. That's the way history is written. Of course, there had been no sodium pentothal, just a harmless prick with a sterilized needle. Artemis would not risk causing brain damage to his meal ticket, but nor could he afford to reveal the book as the source of his information. Better to let the hostage believe that she had betrayed her own people. It would lower her morale, making her more susceptible to his mind games. Still, the ruse disturbed him. It was undeniably cruel. How far was he prepared to go for this gold? He didn't know, and wouldn't until the time came. Holly slumped, momentarily defeated by this latest development. She had talked. Revealed sacred secrets. Even if she did manage to escape, she would be banished to some freezing tunnel under the Arctic Circle. This isn't over, Fowl, she said at last. We have powers you can't possibly know about. It will take days to describe them all. The infuriating boy laughed again. How long do you think you've been here? Holly groaned. She knew what was coming. A few hours? Artemis shook his head. 3 days, he lied. We've had you on a drip for over 60 hours, until you told us everything we needed to know. Even as the words came out, Artemis felt guilty. These mind games were having an obvious effect on Holly, destroying her from the inside out. Was there really a need for this? 3 days? You could have killed me! What kind of... And it was that speechless quality that sent the doubt shooting through Artemis's brain. The fairy thought him so evil, she couldn't even find the words. Holly pulled herself together. Well then, Master Fowl, she spat, heavy on the contempt, if you know so much about us, then you know what happens when they locate me. Artemis nodded absently. Oh yes, I know. In fact, I'm counting on it. It was Holly's turn to grin. Oh, really? Tell me, boy, have you ever met a troll? For the first time, the human's confidence dropped a notch. No, never a troll. Holly showed more teeth. You will, Fowl. You will, and I hope I'm there to see it. The LEP had established a surface ops HQ at E1 Tara. Well, said Root, slapping at a paramedic gremlin who was applying burn salve to his forehead. Leave it. The magic will sort me out soon enough. Well, what? Replied Foley. Don't give me any of your lip today, Foley, because today is not one of those, oh, I'm so impressed with the pony's technology days. Tell me what you found on the human. Foley scowled. Securing his foil hat on his head, he flipped the top on a wafer-thin laptop. I hacked into Interpol. Not too difficult, I can tell you. They might as well have put out a welcome mat. Root drummed his fingers on the conference table. Get on with it. Right. Fowl. 10 gigabyte file. In paper terms, that's half a library. The commander whistled. That's one busy human.
Family, corrected Foley. The Fowls have been subverting justice for generations. Racketeering, smuggling, armed robbery. Mostly corporate crime last century.
So, do we have a location?
That was the easy bit. Fowl Manor. On a 200-acre estate on the outskirts of Dublin. Fowl Manor is only about 20 clicks from our current location. Root chewed his bottom lip.
Only 20? That means we can make it before first light.
Yep. Sort out this whole mess before it gets out of hand in the rays of the sun. The commander nodded. This was their first break. Fairies had not operated in natural light for centuries. Even when they'd lived above ground, they were essentially night creatures. The sun diluted their magic like bleaching a photograph. If they had to wait another day before sending in a strike force, who knew what damage Fowl could achieve? It was even possible that this whole affair was media-orientated, and by tomorrow evening, Captain Short's face would be on the cover of every publication on the planet. Root shuddered. That would spell the end of everything, unless the Mud People had learned to coexist with other species. And if history had taught him any lessons, it was that the humans couldn't get along with anyone, even themselves.
Right. Everyone, lock and load. V flight pattern. Establish a perimeter inside the manor grounds.
The retrieval squad roared military-type affirmatives, coaxing as many metallic noises from their weapons as possible.
Foley, round up the techies. Follow us in the shuttle and bring the big dishes. We'll shut down the entire estate, give ourselves a bit of breathing room.
One thing, Commander, mused Foley.
Yes, said Root impatiently.
Why did this human tell us who he was? He must have known we could find him.
Root shrugged.
Maybe he's not as clever as he thinks he is.
No, I don't think that's it. I don't think that's it at all. I think he's been one step ahead of us all the way, and this is no different.
I don't have time for theorizing now, Foley. First light is approaching.
One more thing, Commander.
Is this important?
Yes, I think it is.
Well?
Foley tapped a key on his laptop, scrolling through Artemis's vital statistics.
This criminal mastermind, the one behind this elaborate scheme...
Yes, what about him?
Foley looked up, an almost admiring look in his golden eyes.
Well, he's only 12 years old.
And that's young, even for a human.
Root snorted, jacking a new battery into his tri-barreled blaster.
Too much damn TV. Thinks he's Sherlock Holmes.
That's Professor Moriarty, corrected Foley.
Holmes, Moriarty... They both look the same with the flesh scorched off their skulls.
And with that elegant parting riposte, Root followed his squad into the night air. The retrieval squad adopted the V-goose formation with Root on point. They flew southwest following the video feed emailed to their helmets. Foley had even marked Fowl Manor with a red dot. Idiot-proof, he muttered into his mouthpiece, just loud enough for the commander to hear him. The centrepiece of the Fowl estate was a renovated late-medieval-early-modern castle, built by Lord Hugh Fowl in the 15th century. The Fowls had held on to Fowl Manor over the years, surviving war, civil unrest, and several tax audits. Artemis did not intend to be the one to lose it. The estate was ringed by a 5-meter crenellated stone wall, complete with the original guard towers and walkways. The retrieval squad put down just inside the boundary and began an immediate scan for possible hostiles.
20 meters apart, instructed Root. Sweep the area. Check in every 60 seconds. Clear?
Retrieval nodded. Of course it was clear. They were professionals. Lieutenant Cudgeon, retrieval squad's leader, climbed a guard tower.
You know what we should do, Julius?
He and Root had been in the academy together, brought up in the same tunnel. Cudgeon was one of perhaps 5 fairies who called Root by his first name.
I know what you think we should do. We should blast the whole place.
What a surprise.
Well, the cleanest way. One blue rinse and our losses are minimum.
Blue rinse was the slang term for the devastating biological bomb used on rare occasions by the Force. The clever thing about the biobomb was that it destroyed only living tissue. The landscape was unchanged.
That minimum loss you're talking about happens to be one of my officers.
Oh, yes, tutted Cudgeon. A female recon officer. The test case. Well, I don't think you'll have any problem justifying a tactical solution.
Root's face took on that familiar purple hue.
The best thing you can do right now is to stay out of my way, or else I may be forced to ram that blue rinse straight into that morass you call a brain.
Cudgeon was unperturbed.
Insulting me doesn't change the facts, Julius. You know what the book says. We cannot, under any circumstances, allow the lure elements to be compromised. One time stop is all you get after that.
The lieutenant didn't finish his statement.
He didn't have to.
I know what the book says, snapped Root. I just wish you weren't so gung-ho about it. If I didn't know you better, I'd say there was some human blood in you.
There's no call for that, pouted Cudgeon. I'm only doing my job.
Point taken, conceded the commander. I'm sorry.
You didn't often hear Root apologizing, but then it had been a deeply offensive insult.
Butler was on monitors.
Anything?
Asked Artemis. Butler started. You hadn't heard the young master come in.
No, nothing. Once or twice I thought I saw a flicker, but it turned out to be nothing.
Nothing is nothing, commented Artemis cryptically. Use the new camera.
Butler nodded. Only last month, Master Fowl had purchased a cine camera over the internet. 2,000 frames a second, recently developed by Industrial Light and Magic, for specialized nature shoots, hummingbird wings and such. It processed images faster than the human eye could. Artemis had had it installed behind a cherub over the main entrance. Butler activated the joypad.
Where?
Try the avenue. I have a feeling visitors are on the way.
The manservant manipulated the toothpick-sized stick with his massive fingers. A live image sprang into life on the digital monitor.
Nothing, muttered Butler. Quiet as the grave.
Artemis pointed to the control desk.
Freeze it.
Butler nearly queried the order. Nearly. Instead, he held his tongue and pressed the pad. On screen, the cherry trees froze, blossoms trapped in mid-air. More importantly, a dozen or so black-clad figures suddenly appeared on the avenue.
What?
Exclaimed Butler.
Where did they spring from?
They're shielded, explained Artemis, vibrating at high speed. Too fast for the human eye to follow.
But not for the camera, nodded Butler.
Master Artemis. Always two steps ahead.
If only I could carry it around with me.
If only. But we do have the next best thing.
Artemis lifted a headset gingerly from the workbench. It was the remains of Holly's helmet. Obviously, trying to cram Butler's head into the original helmet would be like trying to fit a potato into a thimble. Only the visor and control buttons were intact. Straps from a hard hat had been jury-rigged to fit the manservant's cranium.
The thing is equipped with several filters. It stands to reason that one of them is anti-shield. Let's try it out, shall we?
Artemis placed the set over Butler's ears.
Obviously, with your eye span, there are going to be blind spots, but that shouldn't hamper you unduly. Now, run the camera.
Butler set the camera rolling again, while Artemis slotted down one filter after another.
Now?
No.
Now?
Everything's gone red. Ultraviolet. No fairies.
Now?
No. Polaroid, I think.
Last one.
Butler smiled. A shark that spotted a bear behind.
Got 'em.
Butler was seeing the world as it was, complete with LEP retrieval teams sweeping the avenue.
Hmm,
said Artemis.
Strobe variation, I would guess. Very high frequency.
I see, fibbed Butler.
Metaphorically or literally? Smiled his employer.
Exactly.
Artemis shook himself. More jokes. Next thing, he'd be wearing clown shoes and turning cartwheels in the main hall.
Very well, Butler. Time for you to do what you do best. We appear to have intruders in the grounds.
Butler stood. No further instructions were necessary. He tightened the hard hat straps, striding brusquely to the door.
Oh, and Butler.
Yes, Artemis.
I prefer scared to dead, if possible.
Butler nodded. If possible.
LEP Retrieval 1 were the best and the brightest. It was every little fairy's dream that one day he would grow up to don the stealth black jumpsuit of the retrieval commandos. These were the elite. Trouble was their middle name. In the case of Captain Kelp, Trouble was actually his first name. He'd insisted on it at his manhood ceremony, having just been accepted into the academy. Trouble led his team down the sweeping avenue. As usual, he took the point position himself, determined to be the first into the fray if, as he fervently hoped, a fray developed.
Chicken,
he whispered into the mic that wound snake-like from his helmet.
Negative on one.
Nothing, Captain.
A big negatory trouble.
Captain Kelp winced.
We're in the field, Corporal. Follow procedure.
But Mummy said...
I don't care what Mummy said, Corporal. Rank is rank. You will refer to me as Captain Kelp.
Yes, sir, Captain,
sulked the Corporal.
Don't ask me to iron your tunic any more.
Trouble zeroed in on his brother's channel, shutting out the rest of the squad.
Shut up about Mummy, will you? And the ironing. You're only on this mission because I requested you. Now start acting like a professional. Get back to the perimeter.
Okay, Trubs.
Trouble,
shouted Captain Kelp.
It's trouble, not Trubs or Trub. Trouble, okay?
Okay, trouble.
Mummy's right. You're only a baby.
Swearing very unprofessionally, Captain Kelp switched his headset back to the open channel. He was just in time to hear an unusual sound.
Ugh! What was that?
What?
Dunno. Nothing, Captain.
But Trouble had done a sound recognition in service for his captain's exam, and he was pretty sure the
Ugh!
Had been caused by someone getting a chop across the windpipe. More than likely, his brother had walked into a shrub.
Grub! Are you all right?
That's Corporal Grub to you,
Kelp viciously kicked a daisy.
Check in. Sound off in sequence.
One, okay.
Two, fine.
Three, bored but alive.
Five, approaching West Wing.
Kelp froze.
Wait. Four. You there? Four. What's your situation?
Nothing except static.
Right. Four is down. Possibly an equipment malfunction. Still, we can't afford to take any chances. Regroup by the main door.
Retriever One crept together, making slightly less noise than a silk spider. Kelp did a quick head count. 11. One short of a full complement. Four was probably wandering around the rose bushes, wondering why nobody was talking to him. Then Trouble noticed two things. One, a pair of black boots were sticking out of a shrub beside the door, and two, there was a massive human standing in the doorway. The figure was cradling a very nasty-looking gun in the crook of his arm.
Go silent,
whispered Kelp. And immediately, 11 full-face visors slid down to seal in the sounds of his squad's breathing and communications.
Now, nobody panic. I think I can trace the sequence of events here. Four is skulking around outside the door. The mud man opens it. Four gets a whack on the noggin and lands in the bushes. No problem. Our cover is intact. Repeat, intact. So no itchy fingers, please. Corporal Kelp, check Four's vitals. The rest of you make a hole and keep it quiet.
The squad stepped back carefully until they were standing on the manicured grassy verge. The figure before them was indeed impressive. Without doubt, the biggest human any of them had ever seen.
Darf it,
breathed Two.
Maintain radio silence except in emergencies,
ordered Kelp.
Swearing is hardly an emergency.
Secretly, however, he concurred with the sentiment. This was one time he was glad to be shielded. That man looked as if he could squash half a dozen fairies in one massive fist. Grub returned to his slot.
Four is stable. Concussed, I guess. But otherwise, okay. His shield's off, though. I stuffed him in the bushes.
Well done, Corporal. Good thinking.
The last thing they needed was for Four's boots to be spotted. The man moved, lumbering casually along the path. He may have glanced left or right. It was difficult to tell beneath the hood pulled over his eyes. Odd for a human to wear a hood on such a fine night.
Safety catches off,
ordered Trouble. He imagined his men rolling their eyes, like they hadn't had their safeties off for the last half hour. Still, you had to go by the book, in case of a tribunal later on. There was a time when retrieval blasted first and answered questions never, but not any more. Now there was always some do-gooder civilian banging on about civil rights, even for humans, would you believe it? The man mountain stopped, right in the middle of the squad. If he had been able to see them, it would be the perfect tactical position. Their own firearms were virtually useless, as they would probably do more damage to each other than the human. Fortunately, the entire squad was invisible, with the exception of Four, who was safely secreted in what appeared to be a rhododendron.
Buzz batons. Fire 'em up.
Just in case. No harm in being cautious. And when the LEP officers were switching weapons, right at that moment, when their hands were fumbling with holsters, that's when the mudman spoke. "Evening, gentlemen," he said, sweeping back his hood.
"Funny that,"
thought Trouble.
"It's almost as if..."
Then he saw the makeshift goggles.
"Cover!"
he screamed.
"Cover!"
But it was too late. No option but to stand and fight. And that was no option at all. Butler could have taken them from the parapet, one at a time with the ivory hunter's rifle. But that wasn't the plan. This was all about making an impression, sending a message. It was standard procedure with any police force in the world to send in the cannon fodder first before opening negotiations. It was almost expected that they would meet with resistance, and Butler was happy to oblige. He peeked out through the letterbox and, oh, happy coincidence, there was a pair of goggled eyes peeking right back at him. It was just too fortuitous to pass up.
"Bedtime," said Butler, heaving the door with a mighty shoulder.
The fairy flew several meters before alighting in the shrubbery. Juliet would be devastated. She loved rhododendrons. One down, several to go. Butler pulled up the peaked hood on his field jacket, stepping into the porch. There they were, spread out like a squadron of action men. If not for the array of very proficient-looking weaponry hanging from each belt, it would have almost been comical. Sliding his finger casually under the trigger guard, Butler strode into their midst. The bulky one at 2 o'clock was giving the orders. You could tell from the heads angled his way. The leader gave a command, and the squad switched close-quarter weapons. It made sense they'd only cut themselves to pieces with firearms. Time for action. "Evening, gentlemen," Butler said. He couldn't help it, and it was worth it for that one moment of consternation. Then his gun was up, and blazing. Captain Kelp was the first casualty, a titanium-tipped dart puncturing the neck of his suit. He went down sluggishly, as though the air had turned to water. Two more of the squad were dropped before they had any idea what was going on. It must be quite traumatic, thought Butler, dispassionately, to lose an advantage that you've held for centuries. By now, the remains of Retriever One had their buzz batons fired up and raised. But they made the mistake of hanging back, waiting for a command that was not forthcoming. This gave Butler an opportunity to take the fight to them, as if he needed another advantage. Even so, for a second the manservant hesitated. These beings were so small, like children. Then Grubb clipped him on the elbow with a buzz baton and 1,000 volts spread across Butler's chest. All sympathy for the little people vanished instantly. Butler grabbed the offending baton, swinging weapon and bearer like a set of bowlers. Grubb squealed as he was released, his newfound momentum carrying him directly into three of his comrades. Butler continued the swinging motion, driving punishing punches into the chests of two more fairies. Another clambered onto his back, stinging him repeatedly with a baton. Butler fell on him. Something cracked, and the stinging stopped. Suddenly there was a barrel under his chin. One of the retrieval had managed to get his weapon cocked.
"Freeze, mud boy!"
droned a helmet-filtered voice. It was a serious-looking gun. Liquid coolant bubbled along its length.
"Just give me a reason!"
Butler rolled his eyes. Different race, same macho clichés. He slapped the fairy open-handed. To the little man it must have been like the sky falling on his head. "Not reason enough for you." Butler scrambled to his feet. Fairy bodies were scattered around him in various stages of shock and unconsciousness. Scared, definitely. Dead, probably not. Mission accomplished. One little chap was faking, though. You could tell by the way his tiny knees knocked together. Butler picked him up by the neck, finger and thumb easily meeting around the back.
"Name?" Corporal Kelp."
"Well, Corporal, you tell your commander that the next time I see armed forces coming in here, they'll be picked off by sniper fire. No darts, either. Armor-piercing bullets."
"Yes, sir. Sniper fire. Got it. Seems fair."
"Good. You are, however, permitted to remove your injured."
"Most generous of you."
"But if I see so much as a twinkle of a weapon on any of the medics, I might be tempted to detonate a few of the mines I've planted in the grounds."
Grubb swallowed, his pallor increasing behind the visor.
Unarmed medics. Crystal clear.
Butler set